Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
Michael Kist, Benjamin Solak. It's the Kist and Solak Show, presented by SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation.
You are flying high on the Kist and Solak Show. This is episode 37, brought to you by the fine folks at SB Nation and Bleeding Green Nation. I am your host, Michael Kist. Follow me on Twitter at Michael Kist NFL. As always, I am joined by the best doggone co-host in the game, Mr. 8-Year Streak Without a Bad Day, Benjamin Solak. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing very well, Michael. Every day is a good day to be alive. It's I think it's appropriate that this is the Trey Sullivan episode 37, because it's an episode about the NFL draft, and everybody thought Trey Sullivan was going to be the safety of the future, and he's not! So we need a draft one.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to do this draft episode, we have a special guest today, a personal friend of mine and Ben's. He's got an eye for talent and a soft spot for bubble butts. He's the host of Locked On NFL Draft. He's the chief operating officer and senior NFL draft analyst for the Draft Network. He's a father. He's a husband. He's a lover. He is the incomparable John Ledyard. John, how you doing, brother?
A lot better after that introduction, man. I was having a rough day, and now my ego is through the roof. I feel good. I'm ready to go. What is a Trey Sullivan? Can I ask that?
A Trey Sullivan is a player that has two good hits in the 2017 preseason. And then for the next 500 calendar days, we're told that he's going to be a starter next year. And they really like the coaching staff really likes him. And then the Eagles trade for DeAndre Hall at the deadline, who they still have not played. Because Trey Sullivan did not do anything in the 2018 preseason or training camp.
Wow. Sad.
That is a Trey Sullivan. John, before we get into the draft stuff here, I want to give you a second here to promote the Draft Network, because I love the work that you and Ben and all my other homies over there are doing. So give me the elevator pitch. Tell me why the gentle listener listening today, why the Draft Network is their go-to source for coverage, not only in the offseason, but during the season as well.
Well, if people listen to the Kist and Solak Show, they love having fun, and that's really what we're all about at the Draft Network. Can we have fun, and can we do it in an educational way that teaches people about football, but also about scouting prospects and things of that nature, allows them to have their own voice to express their own opinions and their own thoughts? That'll be coming with some of the features we have dropping in January that, as Ben knows, and if Ben talks about it too long, he'll get pretty giddy. But they're pretty exciting. It's really, really exciting stuff. So some really big things on the horizon that'll be probably hitting the draftnetwork.com in January that'll allow people to kind of be able to express their own draft opinions, thoughts, analysis, things like that. But also, you know, just our outlet kind of to be able to teach people, here's our process, here's what our boards look like, and, you know, have fun with it too. The draft is, I mean, I think it's so great because it is fun. Like, there's no immediate winner or loser. And so everybody's kind of, it's not like, yeah, the rest of the football season is so competitive and you get fans trash talking. And then, you know, this time of year, nobody knows who's going to go on their team. So everybody's kind of interested in all these prospects and players. And we just try to have as much fun and just be as educational as possible to fans about that process by doing our homework, watching the tape, relaying opinions that we think are well-informed. And so that's really what we're about at the Draft Network. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun so far. And I think the best is definitely yet to come.
So bookmark thedraftnetwork.com. And John, let's get into some quick Eagles talk before we take a more general look at things. Recently, thedraftnetwork.com, you and your staff, you handed out awards for the TDN midseason all-rookie team. And that list includes one of our guys here in Philadelphia, tight end Dallas Goedert as a first-team selection, despite one dissenting vote for Jets tight end Christopher Milhouse Herndon IV. And I'm assuming that vote was was from Connor Rogers.
That it was, yes, you're correct.
But John, we're off to a good start here, talking good about some Eagles players. Goddard's been surprisingly fantastic as a run blocker, and he has made the plays when his number has been called in the passing game. Tell me what you like about our boy Dallas Goedert.
I think with Goddard, it's just very natural. Like, the whole position just seems to come, as a receiver at least, the whole position just seems to come pretty naturally to him. He's a little bit raw at times for sure, but the ability to go get the ball outside his frame, the ability to stretch the field, his athleticism translated. You could see that really quickly in the NFL. That's a huge positive, a huge plus. Him getting banged up at the Senior Bowl and then not being able to go full bore at the combine or anything like that, was that kind of kept his whole evaluation in the dark a little bit. I felt like there wasn't the buzz about him that I think there maybe would have been had he been able to do those things. Even myself as an evaluator, I put him in the third round. There was too much unknown in terms of being a small school guy, how it would translate. He was my favorite tight end, but I just was kind of the unknown kind of kept him down there for me. I would have loved to have seen him more at the Senior Bowl if he hadn't gotten hurt right in like the fourth play of the day, the first day of practice or something. So, you know, I just felt like the lack of exposure to him against a better level of competition made him a little bit tougher. But to see him even in the preseason, man, against the Steelers, and I could see that athleticism was translating right away, you know. And so I think definitely there's been some raw moments with Goddard, but you know, he's able to play in an offense that knows exactly how to utilize him to the best of his ability. And so far, I think that's really happened. And I think over the second half of the season, he's going to be one of the rookies that really starts to pick up his production. I think we're going to see by the time playoff time comes, if the Eagles are indeed in that race, I think he will be a factor.
Ben, as the biggest fan of Dallas Goedert and the one that was consistently pounding the table for him to be drafted in Philadelphia, does John, what he just said there, does he love Dallas Goedert enough?
I mean, no, but it's fine because I understand. Like, I'm rooting for the little guys. Go Jackrabbits, South Dakota State. It's always been my way. But I think that what makes Goddard most exciting for me when he was selected was, I think, the versatility that Philadelphia was going to be able to use with personnel. And we're seeing the ramifications of that halfway into the season. I mean, as we talked about on the show and as we were discussing on Twitter, you know, runs out of 11 personnel, Philadelphia's got a success rate of around like 40-something percent. And out of 12, it's like 62, right? When they get Goddard on the field, and they love to deploy him as a blocker. He's very tough. He's got a lot of power throughout his frame. He's very flexible in that regard. And so he's accomplishing, you know, arc blocks and split zone blocks and getting to the second level. Fantastic hands. He connects really well. That's where he's been the most effective for them. And while that's not necessarily huge stat lines, it's going to ensure that he continues to get playing time. And he continues to be on the field because the sets with him are effective. And when you're on the field, you get opportunity, and that's what we've seen. You know what I mean? They're working him into routes in the near red zone, and they're giving him looks that are built just for him, like he's the primary read, and that's just going to keep on happening more and more and more. So certainly what was exciting about Goddard, an older prospect, I think really nicely physically developed coming out of South Dakota State, is you knew you could get him on the field year one, and he would be he would compete for you in that regard. I agree with Johnny. He is a little raw, you know, like routes still need some cleaning up and whatever. But he's been what I expect him to be coming out. I think while the Eagles have, like, you know, a big needed tackle right now and a big needed safety right now, those were other positions we wanted them to go early back in the 2018 draft. You have to be happy with Goddard at 50 or 49. You know, that's still great value.
Oh, for sure. All right, so let's talk about the NFL draft that is upcoming. So we've looked back, let's look forward now. And as with any draft discussion, people got to know about the quarterbacks, man. John, is Justin Herbert from Oregon your top-rated guy right now? And I'll give you a few directions in which you can take this. But is there another quarterback nipping at his heels? Maybe Dwayne Haskins of Ohio State's getting a lot of buzz right now. Maybe another quarterback that could either overtake him or get real doggone close to create a discussion about what's going to happen there at number one or number two overall, the first quarterback selected. And why would a team draft a rookie quarterback when they could just trade for a proven, undefeated veteran like Nick Mullins of the 49ers?
I knew that question was coming. I knew there would be a Nick Mullins reference in there.
It's the only thing that matters right now in football.
I can't disagree with that at all. Good point on the second part of that question. I don't know that there would be a good reason to draft if Tua Tagovailoa was in this class. I don't know if there'd be a good reason to draft him if you could go out and get Mullins, whatever. Nick, is that Nick?
Nick, yeah. It is Nick Mullins.
Elite player in the making there. But I think that Herbert is clearly the number one guy. No doubt about that. you could sell me on a path in the NFL in which if Haskins entered this draft, he could be nurtured and brought along and cultivated into a player that was better than Herbert ends up being in the NFL. I think the chances are slimmer, though, and he's further away. And only 1 year playing experience on the field, struggles against Purdue, really big struggles against Penn State. Didn't play great against TCU, which isn't even a good matchup, just good compared to the rest of their games. You know, he's got a couple sort of tough games left on the schedule. Michigan will test him for sure. But to enter the NFL with 1 year of experience, not having played well in any of the key game, you know, it's hard to sell me on a player like that, you know, or that he'll even make that decision. So to me, I think I look at Dwayne Haskins and I say, this guy's probably going back. It wouldn't make much sense. Ohio State's offense is easy enough on the quarterback that I think the NFL would be a big jump. He needs at least more time getting comfortable in the pocket, getting comfortable under pressure, recognizing things pre-snap. And mechanically, Ben's talked about this a lot, but mechanically, definitely some concerns as well that could use some work. So exciting. Yeah, the tools are exciting. I think the peak could be exciting, but odds that a guy like that ends up in a great situation, you know, it's just slim. You don't get the Chiefs trading up for Patrick Mahomes or the Texans trading up for Deshaun Watson every single year. That you just don't see that happen. So it's a possibility, but I think Herbert is clearly the best guy. Naturally accurate, I think, and able to make plays outside of structure too. A great arm, a tremendous arm, actually, I think. You know, people talk about Drew Locke's arm. I think Herbert's is definitely better. He's able to make all the throws, and I know that's a cliche, but when you can throw with touch and with velocity, you can do things that a lot of guys who have been labeled as guys who can make all the throws couldn't do. Because when people say that, they usually just mean he can zip it into any window. That's not making all the throws. You know, Josh Allen, we never figured out how to throw with touch or with velocity and when to use either. I think Herbert has a great feel for when to use either. So I love that about him, that he just knows how to throw the ball. It's beautiful when it comes out of his hand. There's things he needs to do a better job of, like recognizing coverages and recognizing pressure in some of his mental processing, I think, too, in the pocket can be quicker. Those are all really natural things for a quarterback to have to work on entering the NFL. I think the peak with him is tremendous. I mean, you're talking about elite type of peak if he can get there in the NFL. The situation is going to be very important because he isn't a finished product. So if he declares, he's got to go to a team that's going to bring him along. He could definitely end up in a bad situation and be headed toward something that would be closer to a bust than he would be living up to his expectations. Think a Jameis Winston type of situation where all the tools in the world, but if he couldn't fix those issues, and I don't think Herbert's issues are quite as bad as Winston's, but coming out in terms of being just completely reckless. But if Winston couldn't have fixed those issues, you know, he was never going to reach his peak and all the talent's still there. But here we are, what, 4 or 5 years later, and he's still no closer to reaching his peak. He's never changed who he is as a player. So Herbert, you're always projecting, almost always with a quarterback, you're projecting something. Very few of these guys are finished products. I'm just comfortable saying Herbert's going to be great if he lands in a great situation. You know, if Patrick Mahomes went to the Browns, he probably wouldn't be doing what he's doing right now. If he went to, you know, you name the amount of bad teams out there that he could have landed on, probably not doing what he's doing now. Is he still super talented? Yes, but it's the other aspects of Mahomes' game that have developed since he arrived in the NFL, being able to sit for a year and all those kind of things for him. You're playing behind Alex Smith, being with Andy Reid, all the benefits of kind of being in the Chiefs situation have helped make it maximize who he is as a prospect and who he is as a player is special. I don't think Herbert's quite on that level, but I think you're talking about a guy who can be a really good quarterback in the NFL if the NFL does their part and the team he ends up on does their part and develops him like you need to in order to create good quarterbacks in today's NFL, because they're not getting churned out as ready prospects as Andrew Luck type prospects in college football anymore. So you've got to kind of take what's there, mold it and create it and make it into the best version of what that player could be.
Ben, I want you to single out one point that John Ledyard made right there, nitpick it to death and cause
a big fight. I'm so glad. That's literally what I was going to do, even if you didn't ask it. Because
I was going to say, you don't even have to prop Ben.
No, absolutely. This is why this is my pure form of analysis. It's just like, hey, like 95% of that was great, but 5% of it wasn't. So I'm right and you're wrong. But,
I know.
Herbert can make any throw. He can throw with touch and he can throw with velocity, and he just knows how to throw the football. Absolutely. I would add on when he's throwing to his first read, and then when he's throwing to his second read, man's wild. In terms of Herbert sits on play design, right? This is read one. Herbert sits on it and really waits for it to come open, in my opinion. And a lot of the time when he needs to recognize, and John talked about recognizing coverages, He needs to recognize, right, this isn't going to open, and briskly move to his next read. He becomes quite statuesque in the pocket. I thought this was an issue that you saw against Boise in 2017 in the bowl game. I at least saw it against Washington in 2018 in their recent game. When he's forced to his next read, he really loses his vestibular sense in the pocket. What's going on around him is his presence. And I think his accuracy drops because he's not – he's got to – you know, hitch forward, and he can't just go timing off of his drops anymore. So that's something that I experienced from him. Herbert is a guy who simply will, I think, benefit tremendously from returning to school. That's what I would say, because I think that a lot of his issues can be ironed out just with time, just with being exposed to pressure, being exposed to second read throws, just playing the game, which can happen at the NFL level, obviously. Like you're going to play games at NFL level eventually. But, you know, in terms of just his pure stock as a prospect, I think he'd benefit from going back. That said, if this class is going to be super weak, it would behoove him because he's going to be drafted early because he's got enough talent regardless of where he's kind of at in those regards. It would behoove him to come out.
Yeah, there's some interesting things that you mentioned there, but I think one is, yes, and I mentioned to you the issues with the mental processing and stuff. I would counter, I don't know if it's even a counter, but I would say, you know, how many college quarterbacks don't have that issue? You know, it generally speaking, your first reads open a ton in college. It's not always going to be that way in the NFL. I think that's an adjustment that all of them have to make to some degree. Although I agree that at times, you know, it is a little bit troubling for Herbert, not as troubling as like a Drew Lock, who just, you know, the processing is just so slow all the time for Drew Lock. But I do think it's something to watch for him. The other thing is, I know Herbert is definitely on the fence right now. I've talked to some people close to the situation. He's definitely on the fence, very 50-50 right now, and hasn't really thought about it, nor will he really think about it much until the end of the season. He and offensive coordinator Marcus Arroyo are very close at Oregon. And so if Arroyo were to get another job, or, you know, if he is a name that has come up a lot in terms of coaching searches and things like that, if he were to generate interest and eventually go elsewhere, that could play a role, at least, in Herbert deciding to go early to the NFL. Business-wise, in my opinion, and Ben, I'll see if you agree with me or not, but business-wise, in my decision, it's an absolute no-brainer for Herbert. He's going in the top 10, almost definitely in the top 5 picks if he declares. So business-wise, it would be crazy for him to go back, because next year's class, there's going to be at least a lot more names. I'm not saying these guys are going to be great or worthy of the hype they're going to get, but the NFL is going to be way more excited about next year's class than this year's class, I think. And to me, he's a complete lock to go high in this year's draft. I don't know if that'll be the case if he goes back, though.
I'll put it this way. I would tell the young man to go get it, because you're at the point where he's going to be making, yeah, like you said, top 10, I would argue top 5 money when he declares. And that's, right. I think, your first responsibility as somebody who's going to play in the NFL in a professional football league. Your first job is to make sure you get a big contract if and when you can, so you have that money. In a vacuum, I'd like for him to go back. It's funny because I would recommend sure that he declares, but I would also say the most likely timeline to me where Justin Herbert, you know, quote unquote busts, is a timeline where he goes, he's selected by the New York Giants early, Eli stays on the roster, Herbert doesn't start until halfway through the year, Pat Shurmur gets fired after that season after they go 3-13. A new offensive coach comes in. Gettleman gets fired a year later. You know what I mean? Like, it's very easy for me to see the Giants crumble, even with Herbert there, right? We talk about, oh, the Giants, they've got in Barkley and they have Odell and Shepard. They could draft Herbert and still royally screw that situation up. I know the Giants quite well. They could pull that off. And so, like, that's also the most likely path to me where Herbert busts. But I would still kind of tell him to take that risk because, you know, you got to secure the bag when you can secure the bag. It's as simple as that.
Amen, brother.
Absolutely. So we've got all this time to talk about quarterbacks, and they're going to be heavily debated throughout this entire process as we go up to the draft. But one position that I want to touch on here, because it's very possibly going to be an area of need for the Eagles entering the 2019 season and draft. And from what I've seen with the running back position, Rodney Anderson from Oklahoma would be my top running back on tape. But his medical history reads like a novel. And you've also got two guys that I believe most would put close to him and would be elevated over him due to those medicals. One is Damian Harris from Alabama, who probably would have had a day 2 grade from me on him last year if he had come out. He decided to stay, so he's in this class. And the other player I believe is going to be hotly debated, and that's David Montgomery from Iowa State. And the reason that he'll be so polarizing is because his testing, I feel, is going to be huge for him, because his contact balance and his power are fantastic, but he might lack the prerequisite juice to be considered a first round pick. John, find the lie if there is anyone in what I just said, and tell me your thoughts on how this running back group might shake out.
I don't know if there's a lie. I just don't know that any of them are any good, and I know that's kind of depressing for Eagles fans to hear if they're looking for this class. I just think there's major issues probably with all three guys, you know. I will say Damien Harris does look like he's had a little burst this year, but not very good in pass protection. Has never really, I mean, he's had productive seasons or whatever, but he's never really been like this great player. You know, he's never like, there's nothing about Damien Harris that would suggest you take him in the first round. I don't think, you know, I just think that's, so it's just, you're probably talking about a guy that's very average, not going to be a receiving prospect, not going to be, he isn't a great pass protector. And comes off the field in a lot of those downs anyway for Alabama right now in favor of a guy like Joshua Jacobs. And as a runner, how great are we talking about? You know, I think we're talking about a pretty average type of runner in the NFL. You know, I just don't know if there's anything special about his game. I don't. Rodney Anderson, definitely the most upside to me of the three that you mentioned there. But the injury history, man, at running back, you just can't. Like, you can't take it before round three. I cannot see an NFL team. So he may get a great round. He may get a great film evaluation, but you know, and I may put him there with an injury flag. He may be high on my board, but as an NFL team with that type of history, I mean, the guy's been hurt almost every single year at that position. Well, that isn't a great value anyway. I mean, round three is to me his best case scenario, I think, but I mean, we'll see what happens. Obviously, maybe the medicals look better than we expect at the combine. And so, but I think with Montgomery, I mean, last year caught 36 passes for 296 yards, averaging over 8 yards a catch is pretty good for a runner, running back. He looked better and more effective in space as a running back, despite not being a great athlete, than he did as a pure running back. And you hate to box score scout, so I've actually watched his tape too to see if, you know, this is the case. But I just don't know that there's many Big 12 running backs who go high that are averaging 4.4 yards per carry last year on 258 carries. And then this year, 4.5 yards per carry on 144 carries. So we have large sample sizes, pretty minimal outputs in terms of a yard per carry average for David Montgomery. And when you watch the tape, you just don't see the burst to take advantage of slight creases. You don't see a great vision or great decisiveness from him all the time. When he tries to bounce it, it's just not fruitful most of the time. He's just not that type of athlete. He does have some power and some contact balance that shows up situationally for sure, that, you know, will get on Twitter a lot because people will put those clips up there and it'll be easy for people to get excited about that. But the full evaluation of David Montgomery is a little bit troubling. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but like, if we're talking about David Montgomery as like a first, you know, even in the Nick Chubb early second round range, to me, I just, if that's where the NFL sees Nick Chubb, and like, I don't see anything to convince me David Montgomery's better than Kerryon Johnson. They're better than those guys, and those guys were going round two. So, I think we might be talking about a third round type of player.
You know, like John said, it might be disappointing for Philadelphia fans that this back class doesn't really have that standout guy. In my opinion, it could be good because you're not going to be spending a premier pick on a back, and Philadelphia is a committee back sort of team. And so they really can, you know, bring in these guys who are probably limited and can only do this well and only play in these sort of roles. You know what I mean? So there are still guys I think they can probably bring in. You know, there's committee style guys. Montgomery, man, I want to like Montgomery so, like, I want to like him so much. You know the Vince McMahon gif where, like, he's, like, getting excited about stuff? He's in that seat. You know what I'm talking about? A David Montgomery run is like that gif because, you know, he gets the ball in his hands and he, like, there's a penetrator and he makes the penetrator miss. And you're kind of like, oh, like, here we go. And then he's reading, you know, zone flow and he, like, makes, like, a great little cut, like, right up field, makes another guy miss. You're like, all right, like, this is it. Here we go. Gets, like, the second level. Linebacker comes to hit him. And Montgomery takes on the contact and he stays upright and you like get out of your seat. You're so excited. And then he goes to explode. And you're just like, dang it! Like, we were so close. Like, it was almost everything you want to see. And the second he gets kind of into that second, third level and it's time for him to put the gas on, man, it just kind of takes the wind out of your sails. You're just like, oh, like, it looked so pretty. You want to take what's good about Bryce Love and what's good about David Montgomery and just stick him into the same player. Like, here we go. This is it. This is the perfect running back. You know, like, once he gets into space, he can just burn on you. Montgomery's just a low rider. He's a thick player. He's got short strides, and he doesn't have great speed or great agility. And because of that, he's always going to be a player that feels like he leaves some meat on the bone. And this is an NFL, Mike, we always talk about this, it values explosive plays. You know, what do we want from our running backs? We want to be them to be able to rip off some chunk yardage plays. That's the new nature of the NFL. And Montgomery, I just don't know if he has that. And that's so disappointing because a lot of what he does, I really, really like. Ronnie Anderson, man, I've compared him to Jay Ajayi for a while now. And Eagle fans should know, Ajayi's a great back when he's healthy, when he's rumbling. But it's very tough for us to trust him. And so that's, I think, a really good construct to understand not only Ronnie Anderson's play style and his build and kind of the way that he wins, but also just kind of the reality around him coming out of college. He's going to be very tough to trust as a multi-contract or bell cow player.
So Damian Harris is a guy that we talked about that you can see on primetime, 8 p.m. CBS primetime game. Number one, Alabama against number three, LSU. But beyond Damian Harris, this is must-watch television if you're a draft Nick. There's so much NFL talent that's going to be showcased in this game. But there's also some great matchups that I'm sure we'll be looking at again leading up to the draft in terms of how player X performed against player Y or how they performed in a certain situation in a big game against a very good team. What are, John, some of the individual matchups that you're really looking forward to?
I think that, there's so many every single week, but Alabama wide receivers against LSU defensive backs. I mean, man, that's just going to be
greedy.
Yeah, greedy. And Christian Fulton, also the other LSU corner who is his first year playing. I don't know whether he'll declare or not, but it is a draftable prospect, so somebody to keep an eye on. Grant Delpit, the safety for LSU. John Battle, the other, is not Delpit, by the way, not draft eligible yet. Will be a top 10 pick probably next year.
Delpit's awesome.
Yeah, he's amazing. John Battle is he's like 24, but a great player, can do a ton of different things for LSU. Really unsung type of player. They just have such a talented group, and I think that group's gotten better every single week. You know, really gave Ole Miss and that group troubles, and I know Alabama's offense way more complex than Ole Miss's, but just in terms of being able to match up 1v1, it's going to be the most talented group that Ole Miss's guys see. And then, you know, Irv Smith and the tight end and Jerry Jeudy and Jalen Waddle and Henry Ruggs and Devontae Smith, those guys for Alabama. I mean, only Irv Smith draft eligible out of the group. The rest of them, look out for them in next year's class. Just ridiculously talented wide receiver group for Alabama. And they've changed their whole offense wisely to, you know, something that teams like Georgia and Ben and I have talked about Stanford should be doing. Alabama's changed their entire offensive approach based on the players that they have rather than what their coach has done in the past. So mind-boggling that can happen. But it's led to what you see, which is an absolute machine. So I don't think LSU stands a chance, largely due to the limitations of their own offense. You know, it's the best offense we've seen from LSU for a while. I don't know if it's good enough to beat up on Alabama or to keep it even close with Alabama, but I still think LSU's a great team. I would take two-loss LSU over Notre Dame and what they've done this season. The committee obviously won't see it that way, but LSU, really good team, I think, but I don't know if they can beat Alabama.
I'm a Notre Dame fan, and I agree with that sentiment. Ben, one individual matchup that you're really looking forward to with Alabama versus LSU?
All right, so Alabama's got a lot of good players, right?
No kidding.
And so we, you know, it's the summer, and John was our SEC guy, and John just basically got to go through the whole defensive roster and watch all of these players because they're all good.
You got to watch this. Whenever you watch Alabama, like all 22, you watch the defense, you have to watch it like 15 different times the same game.
I mean, I probably watched last year's slate like, I mean, I'm not even kidding. I watched like every game of Rashawn Evans like 7 times just because I'm watching everybody else.
Yeah.
No, so you've got like Raekwon Davis, who came in as a top flight in defensive lineman, and Mack Wilson, who came in as a potential round one linebacker, and is, you know, you're classing about Isaiah Bugs, another like defensive line edge guy who had some good run, and Anfernee Jennings with your outside linebacker, so on and so forth, and still somehow the best players on Alabama's defense end up being these guys who just did, who they're rotational players last year, right?
Like
just like, yeah,
Williams.
You could sit them, right, because you had people in front of them. So I'm talking about two guys in Quinnen Williams and Deontay Thompson. Yeah. Deontay Thompson is the free safety. And he's got that Malik Hooker sort of look for him where you watch him and you go, I wonder if he's going to make it to this ball. And then he makes it all the way to the sidelines. He's got fantastic instincts, reads super well, and then he can fly. He's got good ball skills up in the air. The Louisville game that he put on early in the season was just teaching tape. You know what I mean? Like Saban's going to be using that for his free safeties for the next decade. Incredible film. But then it's Quinnen Williams, the defensive tackle, who really is like a top three player for me. He's above Ed Oliver for some, and I think that's got some serious run to it. Quinnen Williams has a better size on the interior, and he might even have better pass rush ability than Ed Oliver. he's going up against a good interior offensive line in LSU. Garrett Brumfield is the left guard there for LSU, and I like him a fair bit. He's a great athlete. I think he's a really steady player, a smart player who, when he gets beat, can recover pretty nicely. He's able to he doesn't panic and he doesn't lunge. That's a really good trait. And you're going to get beat by Quinnen Williams because Williams is an animal. So Quinnen Williams against left guard Garrett Brumfield on LSU. That's my big matchup to watch. Really excited to see Brumfield against, obviously, the top competition he's going to face. And then Williams has just been eaten, right? Williams has been feasting on everybody opposite him. And so if Brumfield can take a little bit of the wind out of his sails, maybe we can start to find some weakness in Quinnen Williams' game. Right now, we haven't really been able to find much of one.
So a must-watch game for anybody that's into the draft happening Saturday night at 8 p.m. Check that out. John, before we go, I've been known to frequently ask questions for the Locked On NFL Draft Fan Friday episodes, and those questions are exclusively history questions, and I know you love them so much and look forward to them as a history buff yourself, so in honor of that, I have a history question for you. Are you ready for this, John?
I mean, probably not, but let's do it.
So Alexander the Great, at 12 or 13 years old, was said to have tamed a wild Thessalian horse named Bucephalus, who his father, King Philip, then purchased for him at a price of 13 talents, which 13 talents is worth a month's salary of a fully loaded trireme of 200 men, in case you were wondering.
We've currently said six words I don't know.
And if Ben doesn't know, there's probably 14 I don't know.
So Alexander and Bucephalus, they go on all types of adventures together, and Alexander plundered and conquered and all that stuff with this horse. Why is the story of Alexander the Great taming Bucephalus at the age of 12 or 13 completely implausible, John? Your theory.
Implausible to have actually happened?
Yeah. Like, why is it exaggerated? Why is it part of the Alexander romance? Why is it likely nonsense?
Well, I don't know a lot about breaking in horses, but I would imagine that a 12-year-old would get a pretty rough ride based on if you're talking about a wild horse that needs broken in. I don't know there's many 12-year-olds that could trot out there and get it done, unless we're talking about like DeForest Buckner when he was 12 or something like that, you know, just picturing and visualizing. But you need a very man-sized 12-year-old, I think, to be able to get that job done. Is that a fair answer?
Yeah, that's fair. And Alexander was pretty short, so I do kind of like that answer. John, do you want my response now, or do you want it in the form of a video reply, as I usually do on Twitter?
How can I say no to the video reply? That's the problem. I kind of want to know now, but also I need the video reply, so I'm going to go with the video.
Okay, after I drop this, I'll hit you up on Twitter with the video reply in the mentions. So, gentle listeners, look out for that. John, thank you so much for joining us today. Remind the gentle listeners where they can find you and all of your work.
Yeah, the written work's over at thedraftnetwork.com, podcast Locked On NFL Draft 5 days a week with Trevor Sikkema and myself year-round, Monday through Friday. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Ledyard, LEDYARD, NFL Draft.
Boom. We have the weekend off here at BGN Studios, so we'll be back talking with you on Monday about what happened on Sunday. Again, we thank John for joining us, and in the meantime, enjoy the weekend, enjoy your football, and remember that we all we got, we all we need. Fly, Eagles, fly.
Hello, you're listening to Simone de Rochefort, one of the hosts of The Polygon Show. It's a show all about the video games that you'll never have time to play, brought to you by four friends who are just as passionate about food, soft drinks, and TV shows as we are about video games. Every Friday, we bring you a new hour of personal stories, like how we found the best way to play Yakuza 0, or even what happens when you play so much Zelda that you hurt your hands and can't play games anymore. Above all, we just have a really good time talking about the games that we love. Check out the show on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. You can also find us at Polygon Show on Twitter and send a tweet to say hi. Thanks for listening.